Well, a great paired wine can turn a good meal into a memorable experience. But how do we know what will complement the food and appeal to our own sense of taste? I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today, broadcasting from our lovely Milwaukee studios. Wine can be intimidating, but Jessica Bell is here to help. She is the founder and CEO of MyWineSchool.com, and she wants to make wine accessible and fun for all of us. Jessica, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Judith.
And it's especially a pleasure because Jessica brought some little samples.
This is how I bribe people to like me.
And see, this is my first time visiting Milwaukee, so I thought, you know, if I can come to Milwaukee to host and then produce a little wine, you know, how are they not going to love me? So Jessica, you know, we have so much to talk about with you. One of the things I want to talk about is that you just got back from a couple really interesting wine trips, and one was to the Republic of Georgia, which I have to say, because I actually studied in Russia, and Georgian wine is very popular in Russia, that I was familiar with it, but I bet a lot of people aren't. And the Georgia that they think of is
the state.
Down south. Yeah, the state of Georgia, not the Republic.
No peaches here.
No peaches. But tell us, so what, Georgia is actually a huge wine producing country. What
is
it about Georgia that makes it, and where is it, first of all?
Right. Well, Georgia is just south of Russia and north of Turkey and Iran, right on the Black Sea. As you said, the Russians are very familiar with Georgian wine because that was their biggest consumer of wine. Well, then they had the conflict, as a result, they lost a big percentage of their consumers. So they've started to look elsewhere in other markets, including the United States and Western Europe. But I personally, when I was first approached about this project, I knew very little about not only Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, but the fact that they were the first to make wine 8,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. As a wine buff, if you will.
Got all excited.
I did. I said, wow, you know, and how have I not heard about this in all my studies? So that was the first real interesting part. And then I've had the opportunity now to travel there twice, and they have one of the richest wine cultures I've experienced. And I've been all over Europe, South America, the U.S., and I have never seen such passion about wine. But it's so intertwined into their lives.
And their culture and their art.
Yes, it's inseparable from who they are. So even, and I venture to say this, I might get some angry callers, but even more so than the French, which I know, yes,
I can definitely hear that. And I think it is really interesting because it is a country that, because it was part of the Soviet Union, you know, was really kind of an embedded culture in a much larger kind of dominant empire, really. But the Georgians have always had that, you know, real pride. And they've been acknowledged by at least the countries and the people around them who have known the quality of the wines. What is it about Georgia as a country, as, you know, the climate and things like that, that makes it such a natural wine producer?
Well, a couple of things. One is it's in the sweet spot in terms of climate. So it's right. If you look at the world map where wine is produced, almost all of the wine is going to be produced between 30 and 50 degrees north and south latitude lines. And Georgia is just in the middle of that band of 30 to 50 degrees north. So climate is great. They have 500 native grape varietals.
Wow. What does that compare to in other places?
That just blows everyone out of the water. And it's because they've been making wine so long, and grape varietals tend to mutate and change into new varietals. So they've had this head start on the rest of the world.
So they're several generations down.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they did lose a lot of that variety under the Soviet Union at one point. I mean, so many interesting stories when I was there. The Soviet Union numbered the wines. They even took away the names and the identity of the wines to make them more equal, maybe. But they choose, I think, about 10 different grape varietals, if that, and they just numbered them. Wine number one, wine number two, wine number three. And so, there's a bit of resentment, I think, historically speaking, what the being under the USSR did to their wine culture. So they've got amazing climate, they've got amazing grape varietals, and like I said, this passion that just bubbles over. And they also, because they've been making wine for 8,000 years, they have preserved the winemaking techniques from 8,000 years ago, and yet they've assimilated the technology over thousands of years in terms of advances in winemaking. So they have all these different ways to make wine. And in fact, that traditional way of making wine is, I have not found anything like it in the world to that made to that scale. It's called Quevri wine, and it's spelled Q-V-E-V-R-I. Tons of consonants in the words. Is what, like four or five consonants in a row was, you know, not unheard of. But what a Quevri is, it's a clay pot, and it's buried underground completely. Throw the grapes in there, come back a month or two later, and they have wine. So it's the utmost in natural wine out there. It's unique wine, though. It's because it's on the grape skins for such a long period of time, you get flavor and you get tannin, mm-hmm. which is that kind of
the
rough
dry
feeling
mouth feel, yeah.
From skins. And so you get wines that are really fully flavored, very tannic, and then these gold amber colors for the white, and these deep opaque ruby purple colors for the reds, and so they're meant to be drunk with food.
So they're big wines,
big wines, which I love. I mean, the big whites, those just make me very happy.
And so they're. This is in place of putting them in a wooden barrel. It's in this clay container. And does it stay in the clay then?
Mm-hmm. So it'll go into the clay pot. It'll be underground. It depends on whether it's red or white, anywhere from a couple weeks to up to 3 months or so. And then they'll usually take it out. And then they'll sometimes use clay pots for storage too. And that will be in place of things like stainless steel tanks, which is used in modern winemaking, or cement tanks, which are used in winemaking, or oak barrels. And a big difference, though, is that the Quevris, or the clay pots, are underground, whereas stainless steel tanks, cement tanks, and oak barrels are all above ground. Mm. So being underground, you get a natural climate or natural climatization, natural temperature control, whereas above ground, you're either prone to the temperature changes around wherever the wine is being matured, or you've got to have some kind of artificial preservation of temperature. And so most wineries today have air conditioning or heating, but it's very different and unfortunately very difficult to find right now here in the States. They're working on it. They've got a long road ahead of them in terms of breaking into the market. Our wine market is just so saturated with wines, but where I see them making a big difference are these Quevri wines, which there's nothing like it.
Because it's like an artisanal kind of
product. Very, very much so. So they're a little higher price point. And then they also have semi-sweet reds, which you don't find a lot of in the market, and there's more and more demand for them. Mm-hmm. The millennials are loving these semi-sweet reds, and yet, historically speaking, there isn't a lot of it. So I'm hoping they use those two to break into the market here.
And I think part of maybe the reason is that people that don't care for a big dry red wine but want the health benefits that have been ascribed to red wine, that semi-sweet red wine would do the trick for them.
Right. And you know what's great also about these semi-sweet reds is they're good food wines, because sometimes food has a little sweetness in it. Mm-hmm. And whenever you have sweetness in your food, you want to have a little bit of sweetness in your wine. Mm-hmm. And so anything that is a little sweet or a little spicy too, sugar in your wine will help balance the spiciness in your food. So you can have a red then with your spicy food, which they usually tell you don't do it.
So. We're talking with Jessica Bell of MyWineSchool.com about refreshing summer wines and about some of her wine adventures recently. You can join in. Do you enjoy wine? Do you feel confident choosing a bottle in a store or ordering off of a wine list? Or maybe there's a food you'd like to get a wine pairing suggestion for. Jessica can help when you call 1-800-486-8655. That's 800-486-8655. Brett Jaspers answering the phone and Katie Mattson running the board for us today. And we did have a question on Facebook. Kyle writes, I like sangria in the hot weather. What advice can Jessica give regarding recipes and wines?
Yeah, sangria is just made for hot weather, because it's red usually, but you can have white sangria too, but it's served cold. And obviously some fruit, which is always so refreshing in the summer. So in terms, I don't know if he meant a recipe for the sangria, but usually what sangria is a red wine, as cheap as you can get it. Seriously, very cheap, okay? Because you're going to be putting a lot of stuff in there. You don't want to spend a lot.
It would be a waste.
It would be a waste. And actually, the cheaper the red wine, usually the lower the tannin.
Oh,
okay. And so what the reason why that's important is because you're going to chill the sangria. And when you chill red wines with tannins, the tannins become more aggressive. So you don't want aggressive
wines. So a dry wine would taste even drier.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
So you definitely want to get a cheap, cheap red wine. Spanish if you can, of course, because that was what, you know, they're made for. Garnachas or Tempranillos. Or, but you can get some just some California Cabernet would work. Usually the tannins are pretty low on that. And then just some soda. There's lots of great recipes online where you can get really some fun extra ingredients, but then just some fruit, and that is going to carry you in terms of a good sangria. So I think that's what you probably referring to.
And just covering all the bases, as far as recipes, are there some dishes that are just made to enjoy with sangria?
Well, sangria is like perfect for just sitting on a patio. I mean, and just it's a pet. We talked about last time patio pounders, right? they're easy. They go down easy. But you know, it would go well with a lot of things. I think what you have to consider is sangria has a good amount of intensity of flavor because you've got so much fruit. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of sugar in there. So like you know, maybe some guacamole or something spicy and fully flavored, but good for just sitting around and, you know, snacking with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree, especially in weather like we've been having, sangria is pretty refreshing. Just before we go to the news, I've been seeing rosés a lot on menus. They're a nice summer wine.
Yeah, rosés are that great balance between white and red wines. You know, and Americans have a prejudice against, whether it's good or bad, for rosé wines, because up until recently, the most sold rosé wine was White Zinfandel.
Right.
So most people think that they're always sweet. The color has nothing to do with the level of sweetness. You can get a dry rosé or you can get a sweet rosé. And what's great about them is you get the body and flavor of a red, but the lightness and the chill of a white.
Right.
So perfect for summer.
So it can be it can be crisp, but with a nice little sweet edge to it.
You know what's great served with is what they drink it with in the south of France, the bouillabaisse. Mm-hmm. So that tomato fish stew, or I think the Italians have something, Cioppino.
Right.
And so stuff like that, summer foods with these summer wines work great.
Yeah, and like you said, it's you get a little more fullness with the tinge of red, but it's nice and cold.
You got it.
Or chilled, at least. We are talking with Jessica Bell. She is the founder and CEO of MyWineSchool.com. She is based in Chicago and Milwaukee. We are broadcasting from the Milwaukee studios of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Stay tuned. Have you ever been served a wine that's just perfect for a meal? The right bottle brings out the flavor of the food and really adds to the whole experience. And if it's a refreshing addition to a hot weather meal, that's all the better. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It can be hard to know how to choose a wine that will suit our taste and also our budget. We're lucky to have Jessica Bell as our guide to wine. Her company is My Wine School, and her goal is to share her knowledge with you so you can find the right wine for your special event or for your everyday enjoyment. Is there a meal you'd like help with choosing the best wine for? Want to branch out from the varieties you're used to? Well, we'd love to have you join our conversation. You can give us a call at 1-800-486-8655. That's 800-486-8655. Or leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Like the page to get regular updates. Back after the news. Well, as we've been talking about, a well-paired wine can really make a good meal, something memorable. But it can be hard to know how to pair it, or say we're having appetizers and then a main course and then dessert. How do we know what to match our wine to? I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Larry is wrapping up with the Wisconsin Public Radio Garden Tour of England. They've been having a great time, and he will be back with us on Wednesday. Joining me today in our Milwaukee studios for a change of pace and a change of perspective out the window is Jessica Bell. She is the CEO and founder of MyWineSchool.com, and she comes by every once in a while to help explain wine for us and answer our wine questions. Jessica, thanks so much for coming in again.
Thanks for having me.
And Jessica brought some treats today. She brought a couple Spanish wines, and that's a good lead-in to your trip to Spain. But first, I want to make sure people know how they can join the conversation. Call us at our Milwaukee number. That's 800-486-8655. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.com. thelarrymealershow.org, or you can post a question or a comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mealer Show, and Mealer is M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Often we get questions of how do you spell that? And of course, it's second nature for Larry, so he doesn't think about spelling it out. But we'd love to have you join us. So we, right before the news, we were talking about your recent trips to the Republic of Georgia, which sounds amazing, such history there and such a wine culture. But you've also recently been to Spain. Yeah. And certainly wine is a big part of the culture there as well.
It is. I actually see a lot of parallels between the Republic of Georgia and Spain, the importance of the wine. But just there's a lot of things. One thing is that in neither country do you ever show up on time. Maybe it has something
later
to do with
the
wine.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I was thankful that I had lived in Spain for 2 years, so I knew how to handle when my Georgian students wouldn't show up until like a half hour after class start.
Yeah. Wow.
You just gotta go with the flow, yeah. You know. But
gives you a little extra prep time.
Exactly.
You know, take advantage of it.
You got it. So, but yeah, Spain has got, they've been making wine for about 3,000 years and have a really rich history of making wine, but kind of came into the scene, the modern winemaking scene a little late because of the political history. But they are making fantastic wines. You usually can find some really great prices. We started in Madrid, and then we went north and we're in Rueda, which is, we've got a bottle here today, which is a white wine. We also went to Toro, which is deep, dark. Dark reds, Rioja and Ribera del Duero, also red wines based on Tempranillo. And then we went all the way to the north, and they make a white wine there called Chacolí. And I actually posted a picture on our Facebook page with the view from one of the wineries, which is right on the coast.
Wow.
So lots of fun wines while we were in Spain.
So let's talk about this white, mm-hmm. first of all. Cheers. Oh, that was a very nice sound. So tell us about this white.
Yeah, so this is a Rueda. It's actually called, how you'll recognize it in the store is Basa, B-A-S-A. I got it from Downer Wine and Spirits. They have a great selection of not only Spanish wines, but all wines. And what I love about this wine is Rueda is a perfect summer wine. So
and let's spell that. Rueda is R-U-E-D-A.
Mm-hmm. R-U-E-D-A. This is a wine that's similar to a Sauvignon Blanc. In fact, the rules of the region say that you can add a little Sauvignon Blanc because they're so similar. Hmm. But the main grape in this wine is Verdejo. It's spelled V-E-R-D-E-J-O. And like you said, you usually don't like Sauvignon Blanc,
right.
But you like this
I
one.
I like this.
So people who like Sauvignon Blanc will like it. People who don't like Sauvignon Blanc will like it.
It's really something for everyone. But so what is it that's different from the Sauvignon Blanc?
Sure, though? Yeah. First, what's similar is that they're both white. Obviously, but then also this one has a lot of citrus on the nose, maybe a little grassy. But what's different is this one is a little less intense, which I think is a little off-putting mm-hmm. for Sauvignon Blanc. So this one's a little less intense and maybe a little bit more tropical, mm-hmm. Peachy notes to them, but completely dry on the palate. Great acid, which makes it a great food wine.
I feel like I'm tasting it high in my mouth.
See, I love it. It's great because people describe wine in different ways, and I tell them, go with what works. So people talk about high and low. They talk about musical notes sometimes. They talk about the weight or art. I mean, they use what they know
right.
to translate it into what they're tasting, and that's exactly what you want to do. You want to describe a wine that means something to you. Because then, you know, 2 weeks from now, you're going to remember how it tastes mm-hmm. for you because it was your own terminology.
Right.
And this wine is great for grilled seafood. So good and salads. Really great with salads with maybe a little fruit tossed in it. But this is a great starter wine that's going to get the mouth salivating and ready for the bigger mm-hmm. courses.
And I was saying, too, when I tasted it, that I know it's not carbonated but it almost has that little fizzy feel.
Right. So it's not carbonated, but what's probably happening is you'll find in lighter whites, sometimes the winemakers will just spritz a little bit of CO2 right before closing the bottle. And what that does is it gives it some freshness when mm-hmm. it's opened. So you're probably picking up on a little bit of that, or it could be the acid giving it that prickly mm-hmm. Sensation. So yeah, that's very common, especially in this part of Spain.
Great. Well, we have Matt on the line from Madison next. Hi, Matt.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes.
I just had a quick question about aging wine. How do you know which wines to select for that? And then how do you know how long you should keep or store a wine before it you know, reaches maturity? And I'll just take my answer off of here.
Great. Thanks for that call.
Great.
Jessica?
Great question. Let's first talk about reds. So there's three things that I think you want to look for in a red wine to age it. You want to look, and then I'll explain what they are, but you want to look for flavor, lots of flavor, tannin, which I'll explain in just a second, and then acid. Now I'll tell you why. When a wine is young, if it has a lot of flavor, if you age it for 10 years, the flavor is going to decrease. So when you open it in 10 years from now, you want there to still be flavor. So you've got to start with high intensity of flavor, lots and lots of flavor, for it to still have flavor 10 years later. So first is flavor, lots of intensity of flavor. The second is tannin. This is why Cabernet Sauvignon is typically a grape that has the potential to age. Not all cabs can age, but cabs have the potential for higher tannin. And tannin is a plant molecule that gives a plant structure. So it's in coffee and tea, and if you've ever had black coffee, it makes your mouth feel real dry. So that's what you're looking for. You're looking for high tannin because tannin is a natural preservative, and it will decrease over time. So in 10 years, what seemed high tannin at the beginning now seems very well balanced.
It's more mellow.
And not only that, but tannin becomes silky after a while. So it gives you this really nice silky feel, which is a lot of fun. And then finally is acid. Acid is another preservative, but it also, you want to start high in its youth so that 10 years from now, it still has a freshness to it. Now, I will make a caveat here that when you age a wine, you can't expect it to taste like a young wine. Mm-hmm. And that seems obvious, but I think it's important to note that at the beginning, you're going to get lots of fresh fruit on a young wine. Mm-hmm. But as you age it, you're going to get more like dried fruit and smoke and vegetal mm-hmm. and earthy notes on it, which are beautiful. But if you don't like it, you don't want to age a wine then.
Right.
And then for whites, since they don't have tannin, you actually still want to look for the flavor. Look for the acid, and sugar is also a natural preservative. Mm. It really preserves it, and not only that, but when the sugar starts high in its youth, 10 years later, it will seem as though the sugar's been reduced. The sweetness has gone down, and it hasn't. It's still there. It's just been integrated into the wine. And I've asked a number of wine experts, you know, why does that happen? And I have yet to hear a scientific reason why. And that actually happens a lot with wine, is we just don't understand everything about it. But some German Rieslings can age forever. Some Vouvray, good quality Vouvray, can age for 10 years sometimes. Some off-dry to sweet whites can age quite nicely.
Hmm. Great. Thanks for that call. And since we were first talking about aging reds, you brought a Spanish red along.
I did. And this one is not meant for aging as much. This one...
well, that's good because I want to taste it today.
You tell me what you think of it. This is a Rioja, also from Donner Wine and Spirits. And this is what is called a Reserva. So if you're looking for a wine from Rioja and you see Reserva, it means it's been aged a little bit, just a little bit, in oak barrels. So it has a little bit of age on it. But it's meant to be drunk within the next couple mm-hmm. years, this one. Why I brought this is it's great for grilling out. Riojas tend to have a little lower tannin levels. So you can actually put a bit of chill on these. Mm. And it won't disrupt the wine too much. You know, we had this hot weather. And even in the hot weather, some people might still want a red, but you don't want a room temperature red wine.
It's funny because usually I tend to room temperature reds, and the last 2 weeks I could not even think about it.
No appetite for it. Exactly.
When I swirled it, and here's a little tip for everyone, Jessica taught us to swirl on the table so you don't have to worry about spilling it on yourself.
Yeah, you can think of it as like training wheels for swirling.
Really, it's really quite effective, especially with the red that you don't want right down the front of you. And I smelled a lot of cherry.
Exactly. Lots of red fruit. Oh, you look surprised. Woo-hoo. No, you did a great job. No, exactly. You start simple and you say fruit, and then you get more specific. So red fruit, cherry red mm-hmm. fruit. This also has a bit of like herbal note to it, too, which goes really well with grilled meats. Mm. You know, we often put rosemary and some of those types of herbs on our grilled meat. And so this goes really nicely, and you can chill it slightly. Don't chill it like your mm-hmm. white, but at least you can put a bit of chill on it so it's nice and refreshing in these really hot summer months.
I could see this going with grilled anything, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because I could see it really working. There's almost the hint of a smoky flavor to
exactly.
it.
And that's very typical of these Riojas, especially the more and more they're aged.
We're talking with Jessica Bell of MyWineSchool.com, and we're going to talk a little more about what she actually does at MyWineSchool.com, but you can join in with your questions or comments about wine. Do you have a favorite summer wine when it gets hot out? Is there a bottle that you automatically reach for? Or do you want to know what that bottle might be so you can go out and get it? You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-486-8655. Brett Jaspers answering the phone today. Katie Madsen running the board. You can also send us an email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Miller Show. And in response to Kyle's earlier question about sangria, Melissa posted a sangria recipe on Facebook, so everyone can check that out. Thanks for that, Melissa. And Mike on Facebook writes, my wife and I love Moscato. Any suggestion on other wines like this? And I have to say my husband's a big fan of Moscato, too.
Yeah, no, it's great. Moscato's great for the summer. It's great for fruit and anything with a little bit of sweetness in it. We talked about when you have sweetness in your food, you want a little bit of sweetness in your wine. And what's great about Moscato is that the level of alcohol is usually a little lower, so you can drink more.
Woohoo!
Right. So in terms of wines that are sweet and sparkling, it's, you know, Moscato really corners the market. I'm trying to think in terms of something as light and fruity. The thing is, Moscato is such an interesting grape. It's one of the oldest grapes. It at least comes from Greek times, and that's why you find Moscato everywhere. It's really
the whole Mediterranean region.
Yep. Almost every Mediterranean country has their version of Moscato. But what makes it so unique is that it has this really unique and typical aroma of flowers and fruit. And trying to find something that is that floral and mm-hmm. fruity is kind of difficult. You kind of got me there, Mike. I'm going to keep thinking about it. And I'll post it on my Facebook page as
great.
Well as I think about it. But someone mentioned Chenin Blanc, which that is typically not as aromatic. Moscato is just super aromatic.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very perfect. Fumy in a good way.
Yeah, you can pick it up and, you know, even if you haven't drank a lot of wines in your life, you can identify it as this is a Moscato.
Right.
I know this. You know, actually, what's interesting, where you could look is actually Wisconsin wines.
There you go.
That is actually a great place to look. And the reason is the grapes that are being grown here are more of hybrids, meaning they're a cross between the European grape varietals and American grape varietals. And they are very aromatic. Very sweet. Not all of them very sweet, but a good amount of them are. And a lot of fruit wines, too, which I must say that I initially was, a little put off, like, what is a fruit? But I judged 150 wines for Wisconsin State Fair, and I had my fill of fruit wines. I was very pleasantly surprised with the quality, especially cranberry wines.
Oh.
We are really good at cranberry wines.
Oh, there you go.
I know it. I was blown away.
Well, and this, I'm glad that this question, thanks for that question, Mike, that this question brought that up because you tasted 150 Wisconsin wines in one day and you're here to tell the tale.
I'm not kidding. My teeth hurt. I'm not kidding. For a week.
I'm surprised a lot more of you didn't hurt.
No, I know. I know. It was it was the teeth. My mom was a dental hygienist and I'd call her worried. Like, am I forever? Ever gonna have
are my teeth gonna fall
right.
out?
But eventually, a little Sensodyne, and we were okay. But you know what it was? It was the acid in the Wisconsin wines because we're a cool weather climate, and when you're in a cool weather climate, the wines are gonna be higher in acid. So the acid was just super high, and 150 of those, and my teeth were revolting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were so how does a tasting like that work? How do you physically do that?
Yeah, there was three of us. There were three judges, and we'd go through flights, meaning flights are mm-hmm. you know, anywhere from 3 to 8 wines at a time, and we'd all score them, and then we'd talk about them, and the ones that performed well would rise up to.
So it's kind of like a tournament bracket thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a long day. Yeah. I've tried a lot of wines in one day, but I think that must be my top number of wines in a day. It was over 150.
So what were some of the Wisconsin wines that really stood out?
Well, like I said, the cranberry wines. I've got the best in show was Danziger Vineyards, which I wasn't familiar with. Wollersheim did really well. They always do really well. You know, they were San Diego Wine Competition's
winery of the year.
So, yeah. And then we had Danziger did really good.
Where is Danziger?
Danziger is, oh, you got me, West. Danziger, please forgive me. I literally left the next day for Georgia.
Okay. And maybe Brett can look up where Danziger wineries are.
It says, well, it was the one, the best in show was Mississippi Mist. Okay. So I'm banking, pun intended, banking that it's near the Mississippi.
Near the Mississippi. Yeah. So, and you said West, so that
right, would be right. And a lot of them are West. Madison's got a great, not only cheese culture, but wine culture out there, too. So that's exciting. But, yeah, and the Door Peninsula Winery did well. There was a River Bend Vineyard and Winery was Best of Class Red. So, and then the Best of Class for 100% Wisconsin was the Wollersheim Winery, Eagle. Right. So it was a real eye opener for me, and I was pleasantly surprised to see what is happening in the number of entries at that too
right.
in Wisconsin.
That there were 150 wines to try.
Yes,
it's really quite amazing.
And they were restricted by what classes they could sign up for and how many they could submit. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't even all of them.
That's great. You can join the conversation with Jessica Bell of mywineschool.com by calling 1-800-486-8655. Are you looking for a great summer wine or have a suggestion? We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655 or talk@wpr.org. And Brett Jaspers has jumped right on and found out that it's in Alma, Wisconsin. So there you go. Hopefully, I hope they give tours.
Yeah. No.
A lot of the wineries do, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a great idea for a day trip or a weekend is to go wine taste and cheese taste and really support what's going on in our backyard, because the more and more we buy it, the more and more they're going to do well and get even better.
And Alma is just south of Eau Claire, lets us know. So yeah, beautiful part of the state and have a little wine. I have a friend who goes camping based on the proximity to breweries and or wineries that have tours.
I'm right there with them.
So, roughing it is one thing, but you want a nice beverage
exactly.
at the end. So let's talk a little bit about mywineschool.com, because I think you do some really interesting things that make wine a lot more accessible for people.
Yeah, the idea is to really bring wine education to a lot of people and at a low cost and I hate to use the word because it's overused, but demystify, really make it something that is applicable to your life, not a show or it's something that we buy wine every day and yet we don't feel like informed consumers. So I really want to help people become informed consumers and have fun with it too, and it's really a reason to get together with people. So we do a lot of things. The last couple months, because I've been traveling so much, we've kind of been on summer break, if you will, for school. The most fun school you'll ever take. But we do what we call wine casts, which are online wine classes. We do wine class in the area. We also do a lot of private events for companies. And then we do travel. So when I was in Spain, I took a group over to Spain with me. So it's a little bit of everything. What I'm trying to do is find all different ways that people like to learn about wine. Some people like to study it. Some people like to drink it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my camp. Some people like to travel, which I also like to do. Some people like to eat. So we do a lot. I work with my sister, who's a chef, and we do food and wine pairings, and we do food and wine news, too, which no one does. So in the fall, we'll start everything up again and, be bringing more and more wine education and wine information to everyone.
Great. And it's mywineschool.com. People can find that. We also have the Facebook page as a like on our own page. Jesse in Racine writes, I don't drink alcohol, but I'm interested in trying wine. I bought a bottle of Moscato a few weeks ago, but even 5% alcohol was too strong for my personal taste. Any recommendations?
Well, see, yeah, if 5% alcohol, that's about as low as we're going to get. There is NA wine, non-alcohol wine, which I have tried because when I was pregnant,
there you go.
I still needed my fix sometimes. And so I tried them, and they definitely resemble wine. So that's an option. There's not a big market for it, so I don't think you're going to find any really high-quality NA wines. But that's a good place to start. Or, what you could also do is, sparkling ciders. That has a bit of a sparkling wine taste, but they're low, if not devoid of alcohol. So maybe that would be a great place to start.
Okay, great. And let's take a quick call from Bill in Milwaukee. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon, ladies. I really appreciate this show because you're taking all the mystery and snobbery out of finding good wine. There's that Frasier effect, you know, that can scare people away from wine.
That's a great way to put
people to go what they like. I was at a wine tasting, and I discovered a South African Cabernet. My problem with Cabernet is that sometimes it's too dry for me, but these were South African grapes that had been taken back to Germany, and they had made the wine there, and it was just a little bit sweet, not nearly as dry, and I was crazy for it. Haven't been able to find it since. Wondered if you've heard anything about it.
Great. Thanks for that call.
Yeah, thanks. No, I have not. Sounds like you had a red from Germany, and maybe there was some influences, like you said, from the South African Cabernet. And what you find happening in Germany is that it is a cool weather climate like it is here in Wisconsin. And as a result, the acid is going to be really high. And how do we balance acid? Well, sugar. So, and that's not sugar being added. It's the sugar from the grapes.
The natural sugars.
Yep, it's just not being fermented into alcohol. So I'm thinking what happened is in order to keep to maintain balance in the wine, they left some of the grape sugar in the wine and had some alcohol too. So I would suggest continue looking for these semi-sweet reds. The Cabernet probably has less importance in terms of your palate if it was too dry. Maybe look for some reds from Germany, which tend to have a little bit of sweetness sometimes because it's so cool. Even Wisconsin reds have a little bit of sweetness, and then there's more and more on the market each day because there's more and more demand for semi-sweet red. So
great. Out there. Thanks for that call, Bill, and glad that you found one you liked. And Jessica, thank you so much for joining us
today.
Oh,
thank you. Yeah, I'll leave the wines for you guys to research, of course.
Of course. Jessica Bell of MyWineSchool.com. Tomorrow at 11, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk joins us. She has great information to share about keeping our pets safe and healthy during hot weather. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network.